exploring MTV moments through the decades. How profound. Influenced race, identity, and sexuality. 40 years ago, MTV changed the entertainment and music industry forever with music videos running around the clock on our TVs. I was turning 8. We didn't have cable, so I went to my cousin's house to get my fill. I remember watching Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun, Madonna, Material Girl, of course Prince, Purple Rain. Coming of age in a city, come on. What MTV moments stay with you over the decades? 800-642-1234. Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. Kenneth Schonk is a professor of world history and social studies education at UW La Crosse. Ken, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. Well, take us back, if you will, to those early 80s when MTV first debuts. What was early MTV like compared to what you see today?
Well, first of all, the MTV in the earliest days were just a steady stream of videos of what were called promotional videos prior to MTV. It was also very, very white. There were very few Black artists that were on MTV, but there was a steady mix or a healthy mix of artists that were from America and from England. And a lot of that is because of the fact that video promotional clips were much more prevalent in Europe prior to this time. And so this really opens up that early 1980s new British invasion of bands like Duran Duran and Spandau Ballet and a number of others.
So really, rock is taking MTV by storm. What are some of the messages that are, you know, coming onto our TVs in those early days?
I think some of the big messages that are coming through are really about ideals of gender, of masculinity and femininity. And to a very passive audience sitting there watching, these videos are tantamount to an alternative education, as I explore in some of my work, that we're learning about ideations of masculinity and femininity, all underscored by a growing sense of queerness within the video. So for every Motley Crue video that features women as objects dancing in cages, you have a video by Devo or Culture Club or Frankie Goes to Hollywood. And for every video that is promoting women in a more traditional domestic role, you have artists like Joan Jett or Cyndi Lauper or Madonna who are consciously playing with notions of femininity and pushing back against what is expected of them as women.
Well, let's look at Devo here, the all-white male rock band, a pioneer, really, of the music video, and their song Whip It was on really heavy rotation in those early days of MTV. And you look at masculinity, how male artists challenge masculinity. And let's examine this through Devo's cover of the Stones' I Can't Get No Satisfaction.
Hey, hey, hey!
Does Devo's performance change the meaning of the song?
Well, you need to look at the original of the Rolling Stones version, which has that very clear sexiness to it. And not only the music, but in the lyrics, this idea of a young man unsatisfied with the world around him, feeling that the world around him is not giving him what he needs. And so in a changing world, even in the 60s, there's a sense that a male is being left behind and can't find satisfaction. Whereas the Devo version strips away that sexuality, the sexiness of the song, and almost mocks the notion of men and masculinity as not getting something that they need. And so it's a very conscious effort to critique notions of masculinity. And the band's thesis, Devo, short for de-evolution, and their idea was that humankind was de-evolving rather than evolving. And so taking away this idea by the Stones to move forward as a society, move forward as a man. And here's Devo pushing back against that, saying, no, actually, we're going in the opposite direction.
What other ideas of masculinity were challenged on MTV, specifically like queerness and sexuality?
Yeah, there's the obvious example would be with Boy George and Culture Club. This idea of having a trans singer up front singing songs that, if you delve into some of their lyrics, are clearly about same-sex relationships. Especially the song Karma Chameleon is a song about his relationship with the band's drummer. We found out later after Rob Halford came out, but Judas Priest was part of that early wave of heavy metal videos you'd see in the early 1980s. And so there's this sense of a gay man's music being presented within this hard rock element. And I think another one that I particularly liked is the band Frankie Goes to Hollywood and their song Relax, whose original version of the video was banned in the United States. It's available on YouTube, but it's not safe for work, just so you know.
Ken Shank, World History and Social Studies Education Professor at UW La Crosse, studies pop music, culture, and identity. Did MTV influence your views on gender and sexuality? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll continue this conversation ahead on the Ideas Network. MTV is 40. We're looking at how the network influenced culture, race, and sexuality. And I remember the early years mimicking Madonna, wearing lots of rubber bracelets. Remember watching Prince videos, thinking, whoa, he's in Bloomington. Were you allowed to watch MTV back then? What did your parents think? 800-642-1234. Conversation right here. 800-642-1234. Ken Shank is a professor at UW La Crosse, studies the influence of music, with us for the hour. So let's turn to feminism. What was happening, Ken, with feminism during the 80s, especially on MTV?
I think you see in the 80s some continuities from the 60s with the rise of second wave feminism, but also some elements of the singer-songwriter, Joni Mitchell, but also some challenges to feminism coming out of the 70s, like Suzy Quatro, for example. And so in the 80s, you have this very conscious effort by many women artists, including Joan Jett, Madonna, Cyndi Lauper, for example, the Go-Go's, are pushing back against various notions of what women are and what women can be, not only in society, but also in rock and roll. So you have, for example, Madonna's 1984 performance at the MTV Video Awards, where she performed the song Like a Virgin, which she's dressed in a wedding gown, but also very clearly lingerie is present. And she gets and walks off the wedding cake and then goes and performs the song. And then it sort of evolves into this very clear expression of her sexuality. And so here she's embodying the Madonna and the complex, where she's both. She's some aspect of purity, but also somebody who is sexual, somebody who's not afraid to express that, and her own sexuality, something that is to be presented as a positive rather than something that somebody should be ashamed of.
Yeah, like, don't put me in one box. I can be both. I can be more than this. Some of those messages, I think, coming out of that.
Oh, exactly. And there's this notion of this internal paradox of women who are consciously presenting a conflicting view, mixing aspects of what women are expected to be versus a more feminist approach. And in it, you can see some of the origins of what becomes third wave feminism, the types of ideas that even though Madonna's more pop than anything else, but you could see her and hear her influence in later movements like Riot Girl with Bikini Kill, L7, Babes in Toyland, but also Liz Phair, Ani DeFranco, who was never really one to be played on MTV. But there are artists that you could see connect back to that from the MTV era, who, like us, were probably very big consumers of what MTV was offering.
We were impressionable.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Well, let's move to veteran rocker Joan Jett. You mentioned Joan Jett and her 1981 song, Bad Reputation.
Yeah, there are a couple.
Yeah, here, here. A new generation of girl can do what she wants to do, and that's what I'm going to do. Well, you know, what did you hear out of that defiant rocker on femininity?
For me, I think if I remember seeing it, because we're about the same age, and seeing that in the early 80s, it was like, wow, women can rock, right? This goes against what I had been conditioned to think about rock and roll, that it was supposed to be a man that rocked, and women were more like the Supremes or more gentle style music. And here's Joan Jett being very upfront about not caring. And this can be read a number of different ways. It could be read about her sexuality or her sexual appetite. It could be about her music. But if you do watch the video, it's clearly about what it means to be a woman in the rock and roll industry. And the video actually promotes this idea of her own record label, Blackheart Records, that she founded and released her music.
What do you see out of her today with those early influences of being that defiant rocker?
I think it can also be read today with some notion of body positivity that you can see in artists like Lizzo and some others. This idea of I'm not going to conform to what society, men and women, expect of women in society.
UW La Crosse History and Social Studies Education Professor Ken Schonk studies what the MTV era taught us. Do you have a favorite MTV memory or music video that pushed boundaries of gender and sexuality? 800-642-1234. News update is next on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the legacy of MTV 40 years after its launch in 81. This, of course, Let's Dance by the late David Bowie, released in 83. That same year, Bowie appeared on MTV News and criticized the network over how little attention black artists were receiving.
It occurred to me, having watched MTV over the last few months, that it's a solid enterprise and it's got a lot going for it. I'm just floored by the fact that there's so few black artists featured on it. Why is that?
Why is that? That interview with Bowie, posted on YouTube by MTV News in 2016 after Bowie died, receiving millions of views. How do you think MTV handled the accusations of racism and rarely showcasing black musicians in its early days? Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. Kenneth Schonk is a professor of world history and social studies at UW La Crosse, stays with us. Ken, what did you take away from David Bowie's comments back in the day on race and how they resonated at his death?
Oh, he was absolutely right, especially now in retrospect. There were some black artists. Of course, the big ones were Michael Jackson, obviously the biggest star of the 80s and of the MTV era. But you also had some other artists like Lionel Richie that would also be present on MTV. But it's really not until the mid to late 80s that hip hop becomes a real big force, that MTV finally embraces aspects of black music. Run DMC was in fairly regular rotation, and then the Beastie Boys ironically helped spread hip hop on MTV. But it's not until about 87-88 that we see the debut of Yo MTV Raps. And so MTV does begin to air more black music, but it's in a confined block. And it's not really until the early 90s that hip hop and black music tend to be more fully incorporated on an equal level to white music.
Well, give us more there. How did the King of Pop, Michael Jackson, change MTV?
Well, I think just this huge sensation brought people in and gave some of the white suburban audiences a black artist that they could look to. And oftentimes when you find an artist like this, it's oftentimes a gateway to other artists. Mm. And so that made it okay for Michael Jackson. And of course, I neglect to mention Prince. Mm-hmm. Prince also being equally popular in, or almost as equally as popular in the 80s. And he was one of the other Black artists that you saw. And then Janet Jackson a bit
later in the
decade.
Whitney Houston as well.
Whitney Houston.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Let's listen to the 1989 song, You Must Learn, by Boogie Down Productions.
That if you're teaching history, deal with straight up facts, no mystery. Teach the student what needs to be taught, cause Black and white kids both take shorts. When one doesn't know about the other one's culture, ignorance swoops down like a vulture. Cause you don't know that you ain't just a janitor. No one told you about Benjamin Banneker, a brilliant Black man that invented the almanac. Can't you see what KRS is?
What does this song and music video tell about race and education at that time?
Well, speaking from my own experience, I grew up in a very white conservative suburb of Los Angeles, and seeing and hearing the song on MTV was an alternative education. It countered the very Euro-American centric history that I was learning. This came out right when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. And so hearing names that I did not see or hear in my textbooks was eye-opening for me. And it was just as educational for me as what I learned about masculinity and femininity in the earlier part of the decade, and continued as I continued to watch MTV. But this idea that there's a line in the song where he talks about where one culture doesn't know about the other, that was a call for me. Somebody who was a little bit more geared toward alternativeness or alterity, that it gave the okay to build off of this interest and to learn more about history. And this is honestly one of the songs that made me want to study history more and eventually make me a historian.
Yeah. Those lyrics really having an effect on you. What were the companion music videos like?
Oh, the video for this song, it just showed images of key historical Black Americans. Mm-hmm. In other videos by Public Enemy were just as educational for me in seeing Malcolm X, hearing about Malcolm X as sort of this bad guy as the counter to Martin Luther King, but to see about him in videos, that's what made me go and pick up the autobiography of Malcolm X, was because of what I saw in a music video. And so there's not just notions of Black identity and Black history in the music, but also aspects of challenging certain elements of masculinity. And that's very clear in the music and music videos of De La Soul, where they offer some critiques of the hyper-masculinity that could be seen in some aspects of hip hop, and presenting it as something that is more about a spiritual feeling. And that kind of speaks to the larger transition into the 90s in MTV.
Yeah. And we're going to get a little bit more modern and contemporary there in the 90s. We're talking with Ken Shonk, who is a professor of world history and social studies education at UW La Crosse, on the rise and the impact of MTV, its influence on culture. You can join in 800-642-1234. So, you know, in the 90s, what do you see about race happening on MTV? And what are some of the nuances there as we kind of ramp up to that year 2000?
I think by the 1990s, Black artists are becoming more prevalent. And I don't have any numbers to back this up, but I think by the mid-90s, you're starting to see more Black artists than white artists on MTV. And it kind of becomes this binary of sorts, where in the 90s you have the alternative nation being very present there. So the height of grunge, the Lilith Fair, electronica in the later 90s, seeing the very diffusion of Black music on MTV in the 90s. So you have in the very early 90s New Jack Swing, elements of hip-hop, R&B. And then even within hip hop, you start to see a greater presence of women. So Queen Latifah, Salt-N-Pepa, who started in the late 80s, are there, TLC, and a number of others.
I want to fast forward here because in 2014, it launched a website called Look Different. And then in 2015, it had the documentary White People. How has MTV approached the challenges of racial bias that you've seen in recent years?
That's a little bit more difficult for me to answer. I haven't really been watching MTV much
in the recent years. Yeah.
But I will speak to the MTV Awards the other night, in which it featured a performance by Lil Nas X, mm-hmm. who is absolutely consciously challenging notions of masculinity, of blackness, and sexuality. And his performance was very well done, but very much speaks to the space that MTV is still willing to give to artists who so consciously challenge norms.
Let's hear a little bit of Lil Nas Montero, Call Me By Your Name.
Cocaine and drinking with your friends. You live in the dark, boy, I cannot pretend. I'm not faced, only you to sin. If you've been in your garden, you know that you can. Call me when you want, call me when you need. Call me in the morning, I'll be on the way. Call me when you want, call me when you need. Call me out by your name, I'll be on the way. Like,
MTV today is as educational, if you will, as it was back in the 80s and 90s when it made such an impression on us?
Not really. Mm-hmm. There are other MTV stations like MTV4 or whatever that do show videos. But I think the way we consume music has changed. Mm-hmm. In the 80s, when we sat down and watched MTV, we were very passive viewers. Consuming what was shown to us. Now with YouTube and Spotify and other means, you find what it is that you like and you direct yourself towards what it is that you like. And so music has become more niche and it's more based on an algorithm rather than what might sell in record stores. So there is a sense that passivity of viewers, the idea that the station controls you, that you have fewer viewing options is something that is gone. And if you just look at the programming on MTV today, there's almost, with the exception of the MTV Awards, there are very few examples of music being played.
You spent 7 years as a high school teacher before you transitioned into higher ed. What is the value, do you think, in teaching pop culture history to students?
Well, I think it's about the language that you develop. When we were passive viewers watching MTV, we didn't know it, but we were consuming notions of gender and sexuality and race and even class to an extent that we could understand it, but we couldn't necessarily articulate that. And so what I've done in how I teach popular music is to pull out that language, pull out that ability to read these kinds of things. And so when I show in my classes a video by the Go-Go's, for example, they're able to pick up on certain cues and elements of reading this pop culture, not knowing that what they are really understanding are these very complex notions of societal constructs of gender and of sexuality.
Ken, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Kenneth Schonk is a professor of world history and social studies education at UW La Crosse, studies the impact of the MTV era. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer. Kent, this is Thriller by Michael Jackson here on the Ideas Network.